BBC Six Music Podcasts. Six Music. This is a free download from the BBC. Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic. And now, Adam and Joe.
Hey, how you doing? It's Adam here.
Hey, this is Joe. You join us at the beginning of one of our special Glastonbury podcasts, and we are standing just outside the security fence which surrounds the BBC Two filming pen.
The enclosure, the special enclosure, they've got teepees, it's brightly coloured lights in there, and all the security people within there have express instructions to bar us from actually entering. If we were to enter, an alarm would go off, and burly security men would come over and punch me and Joe in the face, and then escort us off the site.
It's hard to believe that we were once on television. We were once the other side of this fence. We were once welcomed into this shiny kind of glade of electric multicoloured lights and beautiful
people.
And one
day,
people.
I swear, we will be back there
we
again.
Get back inside, come hell or high water.
But I would say not for about 15 years.
So 15 years, and then we'll only last another 5 minutes.
But listen, folks,
say something awful.
We have been having a wonderful time here at Glastonbury 2009, and as Joe said, this is the first of two special podcasts from our festival this year. So without further ado, let's plunge in to the smorgasbord of delights. A smorgasbord is the word that I use when I've really got nothing else in my head.
It's one of my favourite words that you use when you've got nothing else in your head.
It's absolutely the bottom of my head barrel.
Yeah.
And when it pops out, you know that I'm in terrible trouble.
Well, let's just be thankful it pops out your mouth.
Here we go with the smorgasbord.
This is a message from the big British castle, coming live from the Glastonbury Festival. We're inside a special area with great big walls, so the weirdos and the hoolies can't get through to go to the loo.
I've got a number of extraordinary facts about Glastonbury for you right now, in a similar vein. Are you ready for these?
I don't think I am, but do it anyway.
All right, here's the Glastonbury Facts jingle.
Where have you got...
Prepare to receive Glastonbury Fact. Here it comes now.
All right. Now, when you were just about to ask me where I got these facts from, right?
Yeah, I might withdraw that question and let's just have the fact and I'll make my own judgment.
All right, I'll tell you where I got them in a second. Here's Glastonbury fact number one. Did you know that the photograph of the Pope seen on the popular T-shirt, I like the Pope smokes dope, was taken in the healing field in Glastonbury in 1983? That was the year that the festival headliners were Laura Branigan and Jimmy the Hoover.
I did not know that.
Did you not know?
I didn't know that.
Are you going to ask me where I got these facts now?
No, I'm not going to ask you.
All right, you ask me later on then.
I know where you got them from.
Did you know that a typical Glastonbury produces enough mud to fill 12 large fields at a music festival?
I mean, that's unbelievable, isn't it? I didn't know that, but I could have worked it out for myself.
12 large fields, that's unbelievable.
It's less surprising than the Pope one. I mean, that's a real bolt that, from the blue.
I was surprised when I read
that
really
one. That's really remixed my
head.
Can
that really be true?
Can it? Well, it
must
be.
I like the Pope smokes dope. That was actually taken in the healing field. Is that really true? How about this? The specials who played tonight, who are playing as we speak at the in the pyramid stage, the specials only agreed to play the festival this year after being promised that the film Ghost Town, starring Ricky Gervais, would be dismantled and all the parts buried in lead-lined caskets shaped like Taya Leone. I mean, that seems unbelievable, doesn't it?
It does seem unbelievable. How do you dismantle a film?
Well, this is the thing.
Are you sure that's not just a typo? I mean, you'd have to go back and de-shoot it.
You'd have to go back and de-shoot, and this is what they're having to do.
You'd have to stage all the scenes again,
I mean,
backwards.
You'd have to
run the film, the negative, and re-expose it in blanket.
Yep, you have to ask Ricky Gervais to stand down. You have to ask all the people that saw the film never to speak of it again.
What a huge sacrifice, because that's a really good film.
Well, you know, it's a fun romantic comedy,
but it
was the only way that they could get them to do the slot on the pyramid stage.
Wow. What brilliant facts.
I found them. I'll tell you where I got them. I found them.
In a toilet?
In a toilet. But it was a nice toilet. Yeah. It was one of the BBC toilets. There is Neil Young. There is a tree.
There's a naked man doing a wee. That's Neil Young with Harvest Moon. He's coming on stage here at Glastonbury in about 20 minutes. That's when he's scheduled. You know, I can play that tune pretty well.
You can, can't you, Juan String? I forgot about that.
I've got a Neil Young chord book. I can't read music, but you know those books where they just do the dots?
Sure.
And you put your fingers where the dots are?
Tabs, yeah.
Yeah, I sing it along, and then you can do the strummy bit, and then you can go ding, 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 ding.
You're quite good at the voice as well.
Well, you just have to do sort of Kermit, don't you?
A high falsetto voice.
Yes.
Go on, you do yours.
I couldn't possibly do it. It would be too moving for the listeners. It really would. You'd be in tears. I've had half a cup of cider. I can only just hold it together as it is.
You'll start weeping.
Get me a guitar. Maybe I'll do it at some other point on the weekend.
That's a promise. Joe said that we're going to go completely up, because we're doing a show tomorrow, right, listeners? Mm. So what I'm basically building up to is saying that maybe tomorrow on the Sunset Show we can find a guitar and you can do your Neil Young.
What? Yeah, on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure, maybe.
That's a promise.
Well, it's going to be bad for everybody.
Obviously,
I mean, who wants to hear me singing Neil Young?
Well, I do.
Like, really sincerely.
It'll be so funny. Come on, you've got to do it.
Something I do in private to my girlfriend with the guitar, you know, and hiding just my bits. I'm naked at the time.
Of course you are.
Yeah.
Or you're just wearing your wolf pants.
My seduction routine.
But that would be amazing. I would love it if you did it so sincerely. If you were so
okay, you're on.
Tied in, that would be brilliant.
You are on.
And then you could make me do something sincerely.
I want it to be all about me.
All right, well, let's just be about you. That's
you're
fine.
Not allowed to do anything.
Well, we should listen out and see if Neil Young plays Harvest Moon tonight, because he may just mess around with it completely.
He may get me on. He might be listening to this. Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, I was listening. Ladies and gentlemen, I was listening to a program earlier on this evening on Six Music. Wait, was she a great big fat person? And it puts the lotion in the basket. And Joe Cornish was on there. He was saying he could play Harvest Moon. I'm going to get him on to play for you, ladies and gentlemen.
Can you imagine the response in the crowd?
It puts a lotion in a basket.
That's what it's going to be like when Neil Young comes on.
It's the Glastonbury Festival. I can't believe we're here. It's muddy and it's rainy. What a special atmosphere at the festive hall.
This is Adam and Joe coming to you live from the Glastonbury Festival. I'm Joe.
I'm Adam.
And I'm a little bit disturbed to see that you can actually watch us with quite a lot of clarity on the studio webcams. It's slightly unsettling.
There's live streaming going on.
Ooh, we don't really like it. Adam and I got into radio in order to, you know, just sort of get ugly and old in private.
Yeah, exactly.
But now we're being exposed to the world and it's troubling.
So we're going to put our sunglasses on.
Yeah.
We're inside a very, very small studio here, right next to the pyramid stage in the middle of the Glastonbury Fair. And inside the studio, it's been festooned with bits of foliage. Is it real foliage or is it plastic
it must
foliage?
If it was plastic foliage, that would be a disgrace for the BBC.
It
would be a lie.
It would not be safeguarding.
It would be a scandal.
Botanical Trust.
It is plastic foliage.
That's a disgrace.
That's a disgrace. That's going to be all over the papers tomorrow.
All over the papers.
Lying
public
to the public.
Money spent on fake flowers.
A charade. A travesty.
You know, we may as well go out there with those flowers and smack people in the face.
Yes, let's do that.
Let's find a mother and her children,
Adam,
and smack them in the face with fake flowers.
Hey,
what,
come
have
on.
I gone too far?
This is the first link and you've gone
way too far.
You know
what?
Pull it back quickly.
Here's the thing, right? Later on in the show, I'm going to tease some stuff, Joe. Later on in the show, we're actually going to be talking to a real family.
Wow.
Some grown-ups and their children who have come to the Glastonbury Festival.
Are they the special Glastonbury family? Are they a Six Music thing? They're the Six Music Glastonbury family, and they're going to be telling us about the festival as experienced by a sort of classic nuclear family.
They're a real family, though, right? They're not actors pretending to be a family. Which would be weird. They're a real family. We're going to be talking to them later on. I'll be genuinely interested to find out how they've been getting on, because the more I come to Glastonbury, the more I think, I would never bring my family here. In a million years, I would never bring children here, tiny children.
I saw a family with a good technique yesterday. They had all their kids in a wheelbarrow.
Right.
And they were just wheelbarrowing them around the site.
Yeah.
You know, that's quite a good way to do it, isn't it?
That's good, yeah. That's like in the stock market crash when people used to wheel around barrows of money.
Yes.
And now
in what way is it like that?
The wheelbarrow.
There's a wheelbarrow. Good one. And that's good.
That's
listen.
Like also it's like in gardening.
Yes.
When they use a wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
I'm
yep,
just trying
yep.
to
No, you're good. You haven't gone far enough now.
No.
Adam and Joe's podcast from Glastonbury.
It's got talking, it's got jingles, it's got BBC, which stands for Beer, Biscuits and Crisps.
Hey man, have you been following the tennis at all?
You know what, no.
Are you not a big tennis fan?
I don't mind tennis, but I've been ignoring it.
You hate tennis?
I hate tennis.
You loathe tennis and all the people involved with it?
No.
No. You know, I'm not fussed by tennis at all. The most exciting thing about tennis for me is the robot roof they've got over the Wimbledon...
Robot roof.
...stadium. That looks nice, because it's all temperature controlled. When the roof goes on, everything cools
you
down
love
in there.
Adam Buxton, you love a hermetically sealed, temperature controlled...
I love air
container.
You know, I know it's not good for the planet, but I do love air
conditioning. If you're driving along on a hot day, you don't like the windows wound down, do you? You like them closed and the aircon on.
I like a bit of air
conditioning. Yeah, you see, I'm the other way around.
Really?
I like an open window.
Would you rather burn to death or freeze to death?
That's a good question. Can I do both?
What, like almost get completely burned and then suddenly at the last minute you're totally frozen?
Well, the answer to that's usually like freezing to death would be better because you can put more layers on. Whereas if you're burning to death, you know, you can't take the skin off.
No,
can
that's
you?
True, isn't it?
So I'd go for cold, but then I don't like the look of either, to be honest.
How about drowning? Would you go for any drowning?
Are these threats?
No, I'm just curious.
No, I don't think there are many upsides to drowning.
Buried alive?
Buried alive. Yeah. No, no.
No, no.
What are you talking about?
I don't know. I just went off on a tangent. This all started with tennis, and specifically the fact that a lot of people have been discussing the vocal grunting styles of one of the players. I don't know if she's done very well in the tournament or not, or if she's been knocked out or what. Her name is Michelle Larcher de Brito. I think she's from Brazil, and she's young. You know, she's barely in her 20s, if that. But she has got an extraordinarily ludicrous grunting style. And you know the kind of thing I mean, right? Previous famous grunters have included Monica Seles and Jimmy Connors, wasn't he a big grunter? Anyway, this is Larcher de Brito in action. I mean, that's not even a grunt so much as just a shout,
woo!
A yelp.
She's having fun.
It's an animalistic yelp.
She just loves it.
Yeah.
Woo! That's a good attitude. I mean, you could distract your opponent with that kind of
thing,
though.
This is the thing.
I mean, there must be some rules.
This is a thing that everyone's discussing. Is it on? The other thing that makes it problematic is that she doesn't do it in practice.
Do you know what I'd do?
What?
I'd go, and serve, then I'd shout, phone call from your mum!
Yeah.
Your dad's over there!
Exactly.
What, shoelace! Your flies are undone! That kind of thing.
I've been trying to come up
with using those techniques.
Alternatives myself. It is a fun thing to do. If I was a big tennis player, these are some of the grunts that I would come up with. Do you want to hear a couple?
Yes. No, I don't. What would you do if I said, no, I don't?
I'd come over to where you're sitting in the corner of the cubicle. I'd smack your head against the window a few times.
Oh, yes, I do.
Wait till you passed out and then I'd play them anyway. Here's the first one. Yeah, do you like that one?
That's just like that's like monkey tennis. Just sounds like an ape playing tennis.
That's a good one. Do you think that would put
sounds
people
Brazilian.
Off?
Brazilian.
I mean, that's celebratory, though, isn't it?
Yeah, celebratory of what? What
Brazilian.
Are you celebrating
Why
there?
Does that sound Brazilian?
That's where monkeys live. What? In the jungles in Brazil.
They've got monkeys in other places.
Not really.
Really? Yeah. The best monkeys come
yeah,
from Brazil.
Yeah, the top monkeys.
Do you want another tennis grunt?
No.
Come
yes,
on.
Yes, I do.
Here's another one, because I've got about 15.
God. It's kind of taken you long. I mean, you're really pleased with this. It is good, though.
You're missing, though.
Sorry.
At the end of each grunt, he's doing a little chuff.
Oh, yes. I didn't hear that in there. Well, that's just pollutive, isn't it?
Yeah, but do you think that would be on? Because surely, sometimes the chuff comes with an extreme vocal exaltation.
That's true, isn't it? When you lose control of your bodily functions and one of them escapes.
And do you think anyone
Does that
would
ever happen
it?
To you in company? You're watching a film
of
or something,
course.
You get overly relaxed, or you laugh at something on the telly and
sure.
suddenly a big, loud raspberry comes out. That's embarrassing. No, but that's a good idea. I certainly think a tennis player could gain capital from some chuffing.
How about this one from... I was imagining this one from, like, an American player.
I'll kill you. I'll kill you. I'll kill you.
Just threats.
I gotta kill you.
Right, so is it aggressive...
I gotta kill you.
American.
Yeah.
No, but that wouldn't be allowed.
I'm going to kill you.
You can't threaten your opponent with death.
No, but if it's not, like, he could just say, it sounds like I'm going to kill you.
Right.
But that's just the way the breath comes out.
Right.
That's how
right.
I train.
Right.
You know, I train hard, I train to the max, I push my body to the right. limit. And if it sounds like I'm saying, I'm going to kill you, then that's your problem.
I'd imagine that's par for the course. You know, I'd be more frightened by the chuffing.
Par for the course is a golf thing, man.
Oh, you're right. I'm mixing my metaphors. But, you know, all tennis players want to kill each other through the medium of sport,
that's
right?
True,
they want to kill
it?
Each other's careers.
Yeah.
So I think you need to be more threatening.
More?
Yeah, stab.
What kind of thing would
well,
you do?
Well, just
go
be
for?
More specific about the method of death.
Yeah.
So it's really threatening.
Oh, I see. I'm going to stab you.
Yeah, exactly. exactly.
I'm going to come stab you.
Yeah. I mean,
you
that would be illegal. That'd be stepping over, crossing a line, but... That'd
be awful, wouldn't it?
Yeah. In fact, maybe the linesman could, you know, call whether that was over the line. How close to the line that felt.
Health and safety. I've got a little yellow coat on. Don't do nothing stupid or you'll be ejected.
Earlier in the week, there was a big, exciting thing happening at our house because we had the premiere of E.T., the new film by Steven Spielberg.
What, you were showing it to your kids for the first time?
For the first time.
Wow.
Kid premiere of E.T.
Really? Did you project it maybe with a video projector? You did?
Yeah, absolutely.
Surround sound?
Surround sound.
Well, maybe it wasn't released in surround sound. It might have just been released in stereo back in the day.
Yeah, well, I cranked it up, though,
did
on
you?
The speakers. Closed the curtains.
Yeah.
And they didn't really like me closing the curtains.
It's too scary.
Too creepy. I forgot how frightening the beginning is, like how creepy it is. He's got weird sort of sci-fi music on the top there, almost like a horror film. It's not all the John Williams. I mean, it obviously is John Williams, but it's not the happy over the moon theme and the main.
No, it's mysterious and the mysterious creatures scuttling. You don't see E.T.'s face for a while, do you?
No, certainly not.
You just see his little legs and him scooting around the cornfield and stuff.
And it's amazingly suspenseful. You don't even see the faces of the adults. You just see their belts and the keys.
Well,
that
character is called Keys.
Is he? That's
yeah,
right.
Peter Coyote's character.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So it's really quite scary. And my youngest, who is about 5, was a little bit freaked out by the beginning bit.
Right.
And sort of buried his face in the pillow. I had to absolutely promise him that it was going to be nice.
Tiny glowing turd man.
Yeah.
Scuttling about. Who wouldn't be frightened?
He didn't like it. But then, you know, he got used to it after a while. And then my eldest, who's about 7, he was much more into it. He was digging it.
There's some smutty dialogue in there.
There's
Or was this the revised version?
No, I showed them the original theatrical.
There is some smutty dialogue.
Has he removed the smutty dialogue in the revised version?
Possibly. They say penis breath, don't they?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm confident in saying that on Six Music in the Morning because...
It's a gynecological term.
Yeah, if he says it in a use certificate film, then it's got to be fine.
That's right.
Right?
Absolutely right. Good call, Joe.
Producer James.
Very good call.
Just taking that as read.
Yeah. And they chuckled at that utterance.
Who wouldn't? Imagine.
But I don't think they stored it away in their locker.
Good.
That would have been upsetting if they'd unveiled it on Monday morning at school. I don't think so. But by the end of the film, they were sort of drifting a little bit. And it occurred to me that they just weren't used to seeing a film with that level of emotional weight. Do you know what I mean? They've been raised on, like, they saw Iron Man and things like that. They probably, you would think they would be too young to see Iron Man, but they absolutely loved it. And they love Transformers and all that kind of stuff. But there's no sort of emotional heft to those films. There's no...
Well, modern children, they don't feel emotion.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's actually, scientists have concluded that they're stone cold.
They're absolutely...
Emotionless monsters.
That's why they like Transformers.
According to the tabloids, exactly.
Because they are robot people.
Let's face it.
So I felt as if they weren't really responding to some of the emotional moments as well as they might. I mean, the fact is that they were probably a little bit too young, right? I saw it when I was...
To understand loss.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So by the time they got to the end, the big emotional farewell scene, right, when he's saying goodbye and I am sat there on the sofa watching it with them and I hadn't seen it for a while.
You're choking up.
I had a terrible sore throat trying not to just cry in front of them. Mm. And it reminded me of when I was young and watching it for the first time with my mum in the cinema. And I remember after we got up and left the cinema the first time I saw it, everyone was just in floods of tears. They were just weeping. But it wasn't quite the same for the children, you know. They didn't have quite the same reaction to it. In fact, Frank just said at one stage, he's hugging an alien.
So that just may be because he's a Buxton.
Yeah, possibly. I don't know.
Okay, we are within what feels like about 5 centimetres of a huge bank of incredibly smelly toilets.
Yes, there is a stench of human faeces in the area, but that hasn't put off the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 hardy campers.
There we go. Now, I would describe this little camping enclave as very civilised. We went through quite a few tents of slightly scarier people. There was some kind of more beery lads that looked frightening to me.
But these are the alpha campers. These are apparently the best-looking, cleverest, but yet most laid-back campers in the whole site.
There's some fellows who look as if they're from the 60s.
There was even some gentle lovemaking.
There's some loving
as we arrived. We've interrupted it now. Nothing heavy, just free love kind of
some
thing.
Some petting. They were just warming up when we interrupted. But we thought we'd come and investigate the tent scenario. Rather than going through all your names again, we'll just take that as read. I hope you don't mind. But we're going to inspect Henry's tent.
There's a guitar here. It's a bright red guitar, and scrawled in pen are the words, "This machine is alive." And the guitar's called Lil Red. But it's a kind of devil-may-care atmosphere here. They're letting the ground come through, and the clothes are on the grass. So there's going to be condensation on those clothes in the morning. That's you're going to be happy with that?
Yeah, we don't care, really.
They don't care. So why did you even bring the ground sheet if you don't care?
It came with the tent when I bought it. It's just, that's how it is.
And listen, I don't want to freak you out, but there's someone's written something on your tent. Can you tell us what that says?
That's V Festival last year.
Okay, so that's like a kind of a war wound.
Exactly. Yeah. These guys are like GIs, Festival GIs.
Why don't you go inside? Is he allowed to go? Is Adam allowed to go actually
inside the
tent?
Well, I've got
muddy
shoes, though. I should take my
shoes
off.
Just kneel with your knees just inside the entrance there.
I see some pills here in a blister pack. And what kind of pills have you got here?
Antihistamines.
Antihistamines. Have you got allergies?
I've got very bad hay fever, yeah.
Got some maracas?
Lost the other one.
So are you guys, what kind of songs are you singing? Do you write your own songs or are you playing covers?
Well, after these guys are in a band.
We're just starting a band, myself and Niall over there. We might be called Atmosphere and the Dot Dot Dots, but we're not sure yet.
Atmosphere and the Dot Dot Dots. Mm. I like it. Are you in a position
play
to give
us your
any...
first single?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is called Bananas.
Yes.
It's about bananas.
It is.
Skibbity bubbity diggity dubbity, skibbity bubbity diggity dub. Bananas. Mummy's in the kitchen when your daddy's not around. Sister's in the garden and your brother's out of town. She eats bananas. She loves bananas. Na na na. And we could rule the world. And we could rule.
That was Bananas.
That was Bananas.
Atmosphere and the Dot Dot Dot.
Atmosphere and the Dot Dot Dots. Thank you so much.
Just talking.
One of the biggest challenges of coming to the Glastonbury Festival, aside from surviving the festival itself, is the journey.
Oh, yes.
It's getting down here. Like, 1 year you and I drove, didn't we, Adam?
Yeah.
Back in the days when we were doing tele coverage for BBC Choice.
What the hell were we
thinking? Drove down. How long did we sit in a jam for?
7 hours.
7 hours. It was infuriating.
It was.
Nothing worse than being stuck in a jam, as Michael Douglas can attest.
Exactly.
You know, in this big metal box sitting in the middle of God knows where, Lord knows where.
I ran
unable
out of
to move.
Music to play. I had my mini disc player and, you know, I thought I'd done pretty well stocking up for the music. I was down to the really rotten stuff by
and
the end of that.
They might have improved it over the years, but the roads around Glastonbury become notoriously congested leading up to the festival. Various local villages have to be sort of circled off by security men and stuff. It's a big hoo-ha.
It's an absolute diamond.
It's one
hoo-ha.
Of the largest of all the hoo-has.
Yeah.
So this year we decided to come by train.
Mm.
And we got our agents to pressure the BBC into sending us down in minor style, right? A cheap weekend first-class upgrade.
Yeah.
Because the carriages were very full. So I was sitting in first class, and some other people had the same idea. They'd bought the cheap first-class upgrade.
Yeah.
and there are a couple of lads sitting opposite me. I say lads, they were in their mid-30s, mid to late 30s. Mm-hmm. Obviously childhood friends. They sat down, they'd obviously sort of got off a week's work early, and they were going to relive their youth by going down to Glasto together, like they did maybe 15 years ago.
Yeah.
They went to the buffet as soon as it opened. How many tins of beer do you think they got each?
Each? Well, if it was me, I'd go for a couple.
Eight.
Eight each.
2 hour journey, eight each. What's the maths on that?
That's unbelievable. What, four
What's that,
of them?
One every 15 minutes?
That's extraordinary.
That was extraordinary. They started off with quite intelligent conversation, but then, and they were sitting right near me. I was trying to read my paper, but I couldn't help but listen to every single word they were saying.
Yeah.
They started to have a burping competition.
Did they?
Yeah. And then that the burping competition, it devolved into a farting competition.
In executive class, this is.
This was in premier class. They started blowing off really loud, classic raspberry farts.
What the hell?
And I thought, this can't go on. So I broke the fourth wall again.
No.
Like I did at the King Creosote gig.
Oh, you intervened.
And I turned to them and said, how old did you say you are? 37.
That was
with
your
a smile.
Opening gambit.
It was a joy. It was a nice, right, lighthearted thing to say. It and was. They looked at me and laughed, but they were mortified.
Nice and
lighthearted. Cornish managed to do his mortifying act
were
again.
Were you shaking while you said it?
No. I'm used to this kind of thing. I'm a professional, professional party pooper.
Yeah.
And then we had a little chit-chat. That was fine. But they were obviously so freaked out at being caught, at being juvenile.
Yeah.
They tried to then turn their conversation into something more intellectual. I wrote down some of the stuff they said immediately after the farting incident.
People you don't ever want to be stuck in a confined space with.
Me.
Number one, Joe Cornish.
There was some giggling after the farting had been exposed, and they sort of didn't know what to do next. Their style was cramped by me.
What a weird.
So they started to talk about films, and one of them said, you know what the best film is ever made? Citizen Kane. Do you know why? Two words. Greg Toland. Depth of field. 75% of all communications nonverbal. It's about seeing the ceiling. He started to go super intellectual about right. Citizen Kane to try and convince me, the cornballs, that they weren't just fartmeisters.
They completely stopped guffing. It wasn't like
the guffing stopped. But he was really making a conscious effort to try and turn his reputation around.
Yeah.
I don't know what their names were. I won't embarrass them. But they were having a good time. And you know what the sweetest thing was? When the train pulled up at Castle Carey and the tannoy announced where we were, they both high-fived each other.
Hey.
Like a couple of excited 15-year-olds. It was very sweet. And they fell out of the train on their faces and fell asleep on the platform. As far as I know, they're still there.
Are you going to tell anyone else in the festival off today?
I'm going to tell a lot of people off in the festival.
We should, after the show's finished, we should go out there and record you just telling some people off.
They were farting. Like, would you have just tolerated the farting? It was stinky as well.
Oh.
You can't do stinky guffs in first class, can you?
No, I admire your interventionary skills. That's very impressive.
Yeah.
How old did you say you were?
Don't paint me as some kind of like headmaster type character.
No, why would
I? It was jovial. It was friendly.
Yeah, yeah.
We're good pals.
That's cool. Good.
Adam and Joe.
Naughty.
Ooh, schwa. My nipples.
We're joined in our tiny, tiny studio by Murray Lachlan Young. He's the poet in residence for Six Music at Glastonbury.
I'm going to try and train one of the webcams on Murray while you do a quick chat, so people at home who are watching the live streams can see his face.
Yesterday, Murray was sporting a pair of very impressive waders, thigh-high waders, spattered with mud. Today, it's a totally different sort of thing. He looks as if he's just come from a desert island. He's got a straw hat on. He's wearing sandals, even.
Yeah, I can definitely say that it is now a flip-flop viable site.
Are you comfortable that it's going to remain such?
I'm pretty confident that it's going to be that way now,
good, I'm
and
glad.
The mud has just moved from that sort of consistency where you get great clods of it attached to your boots, and it's gone through that sort of slightly bouncy crust.
Yes.
And it's just heading into the sort of summer tarmac.
Right. It's at a nice stage, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if it gets any warmer and hotter, then you get the dust.
The dust, and then they have to have the lorries coming along, sprinkling all the paths.
Right. Yeah. So what kind of a poem have you got for us today? Do you want to just read it, or will you talk about it thematically beforehand?
Well, maybe if I just read it, and then if you guys... Well,
we can discuss
I'll give you a little bit of something beforehand, but it's called To a Scrumpy Victim. And you see them, they start to increase in number, especially when you get heat, of course, because scrumpy and sunshine are a classic combination.
Well, the sunshine makes the apples ferment further.
Yes.
In the stomach.
It's the deadliest combination known to man.
It is, and I was talking to Mark Collingwood, who's the stage manager of the Circus and Cabaret, and he reckons it's still... Scrumpy is the biggest destroyer of minds in Glastonbury over the weekend. Scrumpy since 1970, he reckons.
It's
never changed.
Molotov cocktail.
Let's hear the poem.
Okay, to a scrumpy victim. There you lie, mouth open wide, deep baked, still cooking in the morning sun, scorched swarthy by scrumpy god and wild Glastonbury night on which you raged, rattled and extolled, unleashed the beast, half man, half priest, until all things ceased in catatonic crisis, felled by the still fermenting dregs of your magical, malignant ally, drunk, wasted, ruined. No memory at all of when you spied with your greedy eye that gallon jug of roadside rough bought bulk brown plastic barrelette with tenor flush your budget ticket to the court of the scrumpy king and on to the gates of oblivion. A trip on which you cut your sway though blunted blood-filled random blade past fluffy cyberpunk and folky beard to flight through cafe glade mosh pit did you trip, gulp, howl but never sip, and now there you lie, O shipwrecked masthead splintered hulk, and gently fry thrown high on Glastonbury's mud-baked shore.
That was wonderful, Murray. Thank
you
very
much.
That
was amazing.
Thank you.
I've got to get me some scrumpy.
When did you compose that?
Well, I'd started it yesterday and finished it this morning.
Wow, that was fantastic. And perfectly captures the scene of devastation that you're confronted with when you arrive on the site. We're not sleeping on the site. You're camping, right?
I am camping. I had a classic Glastonbury scrumpy victim experience this morning when I was just nipping down for my morning shower after my physical jerks. And I saw this person in a tutu with that classic sort of deep-baked look, clucking like a little chicken and just jump-hopping along, going, yip, yip, yip. And I thought, she's having a laugh, she's joking, there's, you know, somebody's watching her. But no, she actually did genuinely think she was a chicken.
Blimey, and she's still got a couple of days to go.
That's a good time.
That's unbelievable.
She's got to keep it slow and steady from now on.
She's probably having the best time of anybody here.
More than likely.
When you know you're really having a party.
When you think you're a chicken.
Yeah.
Did you have a nice time at Glastonbury? It was wicked. I was so ill in the head that I started clucking like a chicken on the Saturday morning. Later on, Murray, you were saying that maybe you're going to go for a sauna up in the healing fields.
Yeah, I just got pretty fried by the amount of writing that I was doing yesterday, and I got out and I thought, right, and I went to see Neil Young, and because we're right next to the pyramid stage, and I walked back and I thought, right, I'm going to go out now, and I just was so tired and I felt like such a loser creeping back to my tent.
Yeah.
I thought, well, tonight if I go for a sauna, get naked with the dreadlock massive and get really hot and then cover myself in freezing cold water, perhaps that might just get me into the night.
That'll sort you out. Wow. Well, good luck with that. That's I might not be joining you for. I don't know.
Oh, come on.
And now the live music forecast issued by BBC Six Music on behalf of the Glastonbury Festival for Saturday the 27th of June. The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Pyramid Stage, high, Spinal Tap, 1500. Talk about bum cakes, my girl's got 'em. 2000, Kasabian. Expect gale force shouting of I'm on fire. Good. The other stage, Fastnet, Lundy, Irish Sea, 1535, The Script, rising steadily. 2250, Franz Ferdinand. It's me, no, small robot, you know, friend of Ulysses. Peel Stage, 1905, Passion Pit, 80s synths expected, good. 2020, Florence and the Machine, moderate or fair, becoming overrated. 2300, Son of Joe, Jarvis Cocker, brainy pop singer with the fingers of Jack Skellington. Jazz World Stage, 1215, Rolf Harris, nice with an early pint. Now, attention all festival goers, 1650, the other stage, Peter Doherty. Expectations falling steadily, becoming unlikely by mid-afternoon, announced cancelled 1630. Probably.
You needed cheering up because you were feeling rather low, but now you're doing brilliant thanks to Adam and to Joe and their podcast.
This is Adam and Joe here at Glastonbury 2009. Very nice to have you along.
Yeah, now don't forget, listeners, that the BBC has gone interactiveness crazy. In an attempt to keep young and hip, they've embraced almost every single technological platform that's out there. You can see all the webcams at bbc.co.uk/Glastonbury. There's Twitter actions on a Twitter feed. I think there's going to be some audio boo button or whatever that is. No, what am I saying? Some audio boo action. And there's going to be red button coverage as well.
They've also employed some people, some psychics, and a couple of precogs, like in the film Minority Report. They are experiencing some of tonight's action for you later on.
Yep.
And they're reporting, they're saying it's really good. Jarvis Cocker apparently is amazing.
The BBC are going to try and relaunch Dial-A-Disc as well, the Dial-A-Disc service.
They've also got telex machines here as well, if you've still got a telex at home.
And long-wave Morse code signals, bringing you updates on the colour of Lily Allen's knickers.
Also, if you receive carrier pigeon mail, you just need to open the hatch of your carrier pigeon box. And the address for the hatch is carrier pigeon hatch.
What? Why do you address a carrier pigeon? What do you mean?
That's the thing.
What are you talking about?
What do you think I'm talking about?
I don't know. Oh, no, I'm imagining the BBC, like, letting loose a whole bunch of carrier pigeons.
That's the main hub.
And they've all got information about the festival.
Exactly.
In little, you know, metal tubes screwed around their necks.
Exactly.
Or no, strapped around their ankles. Uh-huh. That's where you put information on a pigeon, around the ankle.
Or
and then they're winging their way to various licence payers' households.
Yeah.
One for each licence payer.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, it's modern. It's modern.
It is
carrier
modern.
Pigeons, though, right? It's not all just, like, messages tied to their ankles. They've got chips in their beaks.
Do they?
So what happens is the pigeon arrives.
Yeah.
You see it's from the main pigeon hub.
Yeah.
You shove the pigeon's beak into the side of your computer.
Yes, a US beak.
Exactly.
Yes.
Into the US beak slot. And then it'll download the information from the pigeon's
really?
Beak. Then you pull it out, you lob it in the air, and off it goes back to Glastonbury.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
And you know the colour of Lily Allen's knickknocks.
Knickknocks. It's all paid for by the taxpayer because it's what they want.
It's a good use of money.
It's a very good
it's
use
exactly
of money.
Exactly what the public want.
Outside my tiny little cafe in Paris, you'll find two men called Adam and Joe. All day they sit just talking away. Sometimes I listen and hear what they say. Blah 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 waffles. Blah 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 pancakes. They're making a podcast apparently. It sounds like a load of old crap to me. Oh, I am making the joke.
We've got a couple of made-up jokes, actually.
Do we?
Yeah. Well, I was going to tell you these jokes by way of giving ourselves another plug for our stint at the cabaret stage later on, which you will
anybody,
be able to hear tomorrow.
Do you think anybody here at the festival has a portable DAB? Do you think anyone's listening?
Possibly.
Do portable DABs exist? There might be one or two listeners. Well, if you are listening, don't forget to get down to the cabaret tent at 4 this afternoon, because Adam and I are going to be doing 5 minutes of, when we say doing, I mean reading, 5 minutes of made-up jokes sent in by listeners, and we're going to see what the audience response is like.
Yeah, it could go either way. Either it could be a nice... We're hoping that members of Black Squadron will be there to support us.
Yeah.
But it could be that most people don't know who the hell we are and will be angry about the fact that we're on stage interrupting the flow of the comedy, and even more angry about the fact that we're just reading them off a sheet of paper. Mm. But my plan was to tell the audience, such as it was, not to respond in any way, because we've only got 5 minutes, a tight five, right? So say to the audience, you're not allowed to laugh at any of these jokes. You're not allowed to respond in any way. If you think they're rubbish, you can't boo, you can't laugh, you can't do anything until the whole lot's finished, right? And then we just rattle through them alternately, you and I.
Yep, yep, yep.
And do it like that.
That's going to be a rip-roaring success.
Here's one from Catriona in Edinburgh.
Yes.
She says, while shopping in Asda recently, my boyfriend made up a joke while in the fruit and vegetable section. That's often the place where you make up jokes.
Funny place.
In the supermarket. He seemed quite proud of it, so I thought I'd send it in. What's Paul McCartney's favourite type of lettuce? Lettuce B. Get it? And afterwards she explains, that's a play on the word on the song title Let It Be.
Yes.
I suppose it requires that you imagine that the lettuces are lined up in a row, with each one represented by a different letter of the alphabet. Anyway, I thought I'd share it with you. Thanks, Catriona from Edinburgh. Here's another one. You ready?
Yeah, kind of.
This is from Alistair Baker's friend.
distancing himself. The author's already distancing himself.
He says, my friend Jim wanted to share this with you. Have you ever been to the underwater Glastonbury? For all intents and purposes, it was a bit wet. Quickly play some music.
And that's the end of this week's podcast. Now here's a goodbye link.
Thank you, Glastonbury. You've been wonderful. I'm so glad I'm up here and not down there in the mud.
Well, that's it, listeners, for our first podcast from Glastonbury. We've had an amazing time, and we hope that that podcast captured some of it. I've had my ups and downs. I got a little bit of sort of semi-sunstroke this afternoon, I think.
Yeah,
I got overtired.
You suddenly hit a wall.
I got very drunk on half a cup of cider.
Right.
It's been a roller coaster for me. So, you know, you might detect variations in my confidence and, you know.
Yesterday, we were all full of beans. We made a very rash promise that we were going to finish our afternoon show, then go absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And then we were going to do our sunset show, like, completely off our trolleys. As it happened, we just got very tired.
We got tired? We were walking. We had a very long walk in the sun. I mean, it was at least 15 minutes.
We had to sit down for a couple of hours.
We got exhausted. We had to be wheeled back to the BBC compound in little mobility
scooters. Joe had to have a lie down and some water. He had to have some stories read to him.
Now, listeners, if you hear a roar in the background there, that's Bruce Springsteen, an American blue-collar poet-singer coming onto the stage.
It's the sprinkler.
They've switched on the sprinkler, and he's moistening the audience with his tunes.
With his blue-collar speckled audio stylings.
Songs. Yeah, but anyway, that's it for this podcast. There's going to be another one along very soon, so keep an eye out for it. Yeah, that's it.
That's good, man. Take care. Good night. Lots
Thanks
of love from us from Glastonbury 2009, part one. Cheerio, bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed the Adam and Joe podcast, then why not try the John Richardson podcast? Download it now. bbc.co.uk/6music.